Next case is 10 SC 83, Sanchez Martinez versus the people. Both parties ready?
Yes.
Thank you. I don't know if you were here earlier, but Justice Rice is ill. She will participate in the decision in this case, but just can't attend the hearings. Argument is set for 15 minutes per side. Please state your name and who you represent, and we'll start.
Good morning, if I may please the court. Mark Burden, registration number 30993, on behalf of Nicanor Sanchez Martinez. If I may proceed. I'm just going to recap the issues that are to be heard today. The case concerns the validity of a plea agreement, the finding by the county court that it was not a voluntary plea, whether the district court was in error reversing the county court, and whether the prosecution waived their right to claim lack of notice, given the fact that they didn't object or move for a continuance. Now, as far as the validity of the county court ruling, the standard, as far as we understand it, is that it is the clearly erroneous standard, that the court should not, the findings of facts should not be disturbed, the factual findings, unless they are clearly erroneous. So it's our contention that there is a lot of deference to the findings of the trial court. Here, the court was faced.
Can I interrupt you just 1 second there? Since you start that way, are you? What do you think clearly erroneous applies to in this context? Then, do you think the ultimate determination of the effectiveness of the plea, voluntariness, is a factual matter?
I think it's both a legal and a factual matter. Yes.
So a mixed question that
yes.
We would review.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think in this case, the court was faced in a hearing, an evidentiary hearing, 35C hearing, and heard that the defendant was illiterate both in his native Spanish and in English, and the district attorney, the people, actually elicited testimony concerning this, that in the county court, his advisor of rights was written, almost completely written. There was not a extensive advisor of rights by the court on the record, and that this person, it was in Spanish, but this person cannot read Spanish, and that he was told to sign the form.
Since this is such a short argument, could I interrupt you and move you straight to what seemed to me? I didn't pick up that there was really, and maybe I'm wrong, but the central question was whether he could read or couldn't read with the voluntary. So it seems like the issue went more off on what was the allegation, what was raised by the defendant for a 35C, and that seemed to be, at least your opponents say, that was a newly discovered evidence claim.
Correct.
And the part that I found a little difficult was even the judge in ruling didn't seem to find, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that the plea was ineffective because it was involuntary, but rather he seemed to find that the voluntariness of the plea was one aspect of a finding of newly discovered evidence, and therefore he granted a new trial based on newly discovered evidence. But the reason was because he thought the plea was ineffective. Is that a reasonable characterization of what happened?
Yes. Yes. Number Schneider, which was the case in question, it goes into some detail about the high burden that a defendant must.
Let me bring you down to one narrower point here. Then, so point I guess that's confusing me is, if the plea was ineffective, if it was involuntary, well, then it's void.
Correct.
So we don't have to deal with newly discovered evidence at all, right? But I'm left with the feeling here that there is an argument that the effectiveness of the plea was not raised. but rather, or was not alleged as a ground for granting a 35C, but rather only newly discovered evidence. And so the suggestion for here, in my mind, is that the judge has tried to squeeze the effectiveness of the plea into a claim for newly discovered evidence in order to avoid the problem that this was not an issue that was ever raised. Am I understanding that right, or do you see that differently?
I see it differently. I think he just saw that it was a clearly involuntary plea. And that as part of the standard, the high standard for evidence under Schneider, it presupposes a valid plea. And I think he found that the plea was invalid, and therefore the defendant was to carry the day.
Mr. Martin, he withdrew the plea.
Pardon?
His order withdraws the plea specifically. So it's an unconstitutional plea.
Correct.
So
I think he found it was unconstitutional based on involuntariness and based on the understanding of the lack of understanding of the constitutional rights of Mr. Sanchez Martinez at the time that he entered into the plea.
Did you feel then on that basis that that was an issue that was raised by him and that the prosecution was on notice they had to defend against a claim of involuntariness?
I believe that they cited Schneider in the prosecution in their argument. And it's very clear that under that case that the voluntariness of plea is an issue because of the high standard for new evidence. There was also some inkling of that in the pleadings that he was a person who didn't understand what happened in court and things of that nature. However, it was not the gravamen of the complaint about by the defendant. It was not the claim by the defendant. This is something that came up based on testimony elicited by the district attorney, the prosecution, concerning the voluntariness of the plea.
If I might interrupt and follow up on the same train of thought by Justice Coates. So the basis of the motion was a C-26, newly discovered evidence. And as I read the transcript, even after the prosecution elicited this testimony on cross, defense counsel in their summation continued to focus on newly discovered evidence, which again was the basis of the motion. I guess I'm trying to understand the argument here on appeal. Are you shifting away from newly discovered evidence and the notion that the involuntariness is somehow wrapped up in Schneider? Or are you saying that basically the trial court here correctly, sua sponte, found a different basis for invalidating the plea?
Yes, the latter. I think that sua sponte, this evidence was elicited by the prosecution. It came up that the court, as a sort of overseer of the criminal rules of procedure 11, found that they had not been complied with and correctly found that the plea was involuntary.
So essentially, basically, the trial court sua sponte converted this to a C-2-1. Didn't meet the requirements of the Constitution or was in violation of the laws of the state.
Correct. I think the court did do that analysis under that subsection. And I think correctly. And I think that, first of all, I think that it was appropriate as the court, the guardian of the Constitution has, under the case law we cited, has the obligation to ensure compliance with that rule. So it's our contention that that was correct. And as far as waiver, it's our contention that the prosecution waived bringing this up on appeal, because of the prosecutor in the case on two different issues was talking about asking for a continuance and objecting to a proceeding. One was on the present need, and the other was that he wanted to bring some witnesses to counter the new evidence. The court made it very clear to the parties that he was very troubled by the plea in this case, given the lack of understanding of Mr. Sanchez Martinez. He made it very clear. And there was no request, there was no objection to him finding anything, to him considering that. There was no request for a continuance to try and bring evidence to rebut this.
Yet there was also no request from the defense, in light of this new testimony, that the grounds or the basis for relief had somehow shifted in light of that testimony. It seemed to me, at least in my reading of the transcript, that defense counsel maintained that this, the basis for the relief was still newly discovered evidence. Is that, or did I read the record wrong?
No, that's absolutely correct. The defense did argue that. However, I think the court correctly caught on to the real issue in this case, which was the validity of the plea. The defense did not argue that the plea was invalid. That's true. However, the prosecution, upon hearing that the court was troubled and concerned and most likely going to rule in the that the plea was involuntary, took no steps. And under the case law, if you fail to object in the trial court,
are you saying there was a failure to make a contemporaneous objection to the admission of evidence, or
no.
Are you saying they should have asked for reconsideration and were obliged to do that?
Yes.
Or what?
Yeah, I think there was a they couldn't object to testimony that they elicited themselves, because they are the party that elicited. In fact, they went to some length to try and
so it seems like the objection you're talking about is an objection to the judge's ruling, is that right? So
objection to him considering that proposition.
I guess they don't know what he's going to do until he rules, do they? And if in that case, are you suggesting that they had an obligation, and is there something in the rule that says that, to ask for reconsideration before appealing?
No, but I there is a lot of case law on stating that failure to object waives issues on appeal. And he announced that he was going to do this, and there was no objection. There was no move for continuance. There was no attempt.
Failure to object to a pre-telegraphed by the judge what he's going to rule?
Yes, failure to object that the judge was even going to consider that. Because he made it very clear that he was going to consider that. And also there's the invited error doctrine that the defense didn't even elicit testimony concerning the voluntariness of the plea. It was the district attorney who did that. The district attorney actually got into some somewhat of a discussion with the court so that they could it was a testimony that was beyond the scope of the direct. They are the a party that actually did that, and those case law, which we cited in our brief, stating that you can't complain of something that you caused yourself, basically, to put it into layman's terms.
Regardless of whether there was some waiver of sort or another, let me just move you to a different point, which is the order that we're reviewing directly is not that of the county court, but instead that of the district court. How do you view the district court's ruling in terms of what it reviewed that the county court did?
The district court ruling went over the evidence and the new based on the Schneider standard list announced in Schneider, but made I think a very brief a statement concerning that there was lack of notice and therefore we reverse, and there was no discussion of that. That's how I see the district court's ruling.
Do you think this turns then on whether the district court is right about the notice issue?
No, I don't think so whatsoever. I think that the court was within its right to sua sponte review this, given the constitutional dimensions.
So you think the district court order then is wrong for not reviewing the actual true basis of the county court order, which is on the voluntariness issue?
Yes. Yes. We are asking the court to reverse the district court in this matter, given that the plea was involuntary, that the court was within its right to act on this matter, and that there was a waiver. And I would try and reserve 28 seconds for rebuttal.
Your Honors, excuse me. My name is Russell Wentworth, registration number 38215, represent the people of the state of Colorado. And Your Honors, the issue in this case is lack of notice. It wasn't a brief mention of lack of notice in the district court ruling. That was really what they talked about.
Just walk that through. I'm not totally confused. Reading the district court's order, reading the magistrate or Mr. Moll's ruling, would you just explain to me why the DA wasn't there, if that's the claim at the time that this was considered, whether or not this was a knowing, voluntary plea?
I'm sorry, the DA wasn't there for what?
Well, what's the lack of notice? I mean, wasn't the prosecutor in the room when the magistrate, in effect, exercised the plea?
The magistrate stated that he might set this plea aside for the knowing, intelligent, and voluntary. But it was the thoughts of the magistrate. He wasn't saying that this is what he was going to base his whole ruling on. So
he enters this written ruling, and the prosecution doesn't have a chance to say that, in fact, it was voluntary, knowing.
I'm not sure when that would take place.
Okay.
Because he issued a written ruling.
Right.
There was no chance to object to it. And okay. Even when the magistrate brought up the issue of whether this might be voluntary or knowing.
Okay, so the prosecution didn't ask for an evidentiary presentation to show that, in fact, this gentleman understood the plea?
When the magistrate verbally mentioned its concerns, this was at the end of the hearing.
Right.
There was no chance for an objection. The prosecution didn't even know that this was going to be the sole issue that made the decision in the written ruling.
So, could you explain to me on the record that I don't understand? The magistrate in the written ruling references another misdemeanor case, not this case. What's that about?
Your Honor, I'm not sure why the magistrate referenced that case. Evidently, he didn't agree with the way another prosecutor handled the case and felt that defendants were being pressured into pleas and that defendants didn't understand what was going on in the courtroom.
Which also referenced the courtroom R, the way pleas were entered?
Yes, which is where magistrate Moore is.
And any light, can you shed any light on that?
I'm sorry,
can you say on that, on why that was mentioned or what was going on there?
I did not look that case up in particular. But it would appear that Magistrate Moore believes that this is a common practice by the people and held it against us in this case.
Can we assume for a moment that, in fact, the basis of the 35C motion had been the voluntariness of the plea? Can you tell me what the prosecution would have done differently? As I read the cross-examination, it was intended to go at exactly that issue. The questions were tethered to, you know, did you know what you were doing? Did you have a chance to read this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? So what difference would notice, I guess, in advance of this particular hearing have made for the prosecution?
The prosecution would have brought in the Providency hearing transcript, which alleviated all of the concerns of whether this was a valid plea. The Providence hearing transcript was a mere 7 pages. It would have been inexpensive to order, and it wouldn't have taken long to produce. Either the people or the defense would have brought it in, and it would show that the defendant was explained all the elements of third-degree assault, which is what he pled guilty to, and that he clearly understood what the court was saying. because his responses to the court's questions and the court's statements are in the right context.
Russ and Swearer, that's just a little troubling to me on the general grounds, because the magistrate said he wasn't advised of the elements of the crime and, on the record, and you're saying that an actual transcript shows otherwise. Is that
right?
That is
correct, sir.
I'm sorry, do we have that transcript in the record here?
Yes, sir.
And was that transcript before the magistrate when he set aside this plea?
It was not.
I'm sorry?
It was not.
Thank you.
And that's because no one knew to bring it in. It wouldn't have made any difference on a newly discovered evidence post-conviction motion hearing, which is solely what the basis of this post-conviction.
Well, so why didn't the prosecution move for a continuance or ask for the insertion of this providency hearing transcript into the record?
Because the magistrate ruled on the constitutionality of the plea in its written ruling.
Right.
The hearings were over.
Prosecution seek reconsideration and submit the plea, the providency hearing transcript, as part of a motion for reconsideration?
No, Your Honor.
I don't understand that. I mean, isn't the basic rule is that the officer that's going to make the judicial ruling ought to have the opportunity to correct the error? Or, you know?
That was not done here, Your Honor. And with regard to notice, this is plain error that the magistrate brought up an issue sua sponte and decided that it could do this without notifying either of the parties that this was going to be done. This undermined the fundamental fairness of the proceedings.
May I ask a question about that?
Yes.
If you're going to argue plain error, are you conceding that you failed to make an objection that you were obliged to make?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not conceding that. I don't believe there was any opportunity to make an objection. But if this court finds that there was an opportunity to make an objection, the people believe that.
So your plain error argument is a sort of an even if type of argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And Your Honors, the people don't disagree that the magistrate couldn't correct a constitutional violation. But the issue is not what, but how it does it. If the magistrate brought up that this was the issue that it was going to decide on, then the magistrate could have said, okay, you can come back at a later time. Now you know what we're going to talk about. We would have produced.
Well, but don't you have to ask for that opportunity? Here we have an appeal to the district court, which seems it's gone off on other grounds, doesn't even consider what the magistrate found. So we don't really have the cards before the district judge that the magistrate decided on. We don't have a key piece of evidence that you could have had in the proceeding that maybe would have convinced the magistrate that he was in error so that he would have corrected his ruling and not set aside the plea.
But Your Honor, the people have a right to appeal. We don't have to file a motion for reconsideration.
Yeah, but I'm very frustrated. You know, seemingly there's evidence you have that you didn't get in front of the magistrate. Now, I understand that that maybe he precipitously changed course or you didn't know you had to bring that in, but it would have seemed that you should have offered it in a motion to the magistrate to review and set aside his ruling.
And that wasn't done, Your Honor.
Ms. Whitworth, I'm just, I'm a little flummoxed by the transcript part. Did you file that as an extra? It's not actually part of the record in this case, right?
It is, Your Honor.
It isn't part of the record?
It is part of the record before the court.
How so? If you didn't file anything in the trial court?
Did you file it as an addendum
to your brief?
The transcript and how valuable that transcript would have been had the people had notice that the issue was going to be decided.
Attached that to your brief or what? Did you? I'm just confused by it.
The question is, how did it get to be?
Yeah, how did it? How's it right in front of us?
I ordered it, and
I'm sure you ordered it.
Did you do that on appeal in the district court?
You know, I don't believe so.
This wasn't part of the record in the district court, you think?
The issue isn't. It's not even that important. What is in the providency hearing transcript? What's really important is that we didn't know that we'd need it. We could have introduced it. and that the magistrate, excuse me, the county court did not provide us an opportunity to know that we would need that.
And I think we appreciate that. I guess everybody was just kind of concerned about, well, what if it's part of the record here, how did it get that way? How did it become part of the record in the Supreme Court? Was it in the record in the appeal that we're reviewing? Was it raised before the trial judge? You know, you seem to have answered those questions, I think, and you've said no. You filed it in this court, but it was not part of the record below of the cases we're reviewing. Is that pretty much an accurate statement?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, it might be important from another perspective, because I gather that what you think should be done is that this should be remanded eventually here, district court order, I suppose, affirmed, and the thing remanded to the county court for further hearings on the voluntariness issue. In the interest of judicial efficiency, however, if the only thing lacking to the magistrate is the transcript, then are you suggesting we should not look at the transcript in terms of taking our view of the voluntariness issue and whether it needs to be remanded?
Your Honor, the court may do that. I didn't know the court was interested in an evidentiary hearing.
It seems as though the evidentiary hearing has been held, because what you're saying, unless you have a further response to the question from Justice Marcus, was that the only thing lacking for the magistrate in terms of the evidentiary hearing was the transcript. And that the transcript is now apparently before us, whether it's part of the record or not.
I would agree, Your Honor. And the people would have asked for affirmation and remanded back to county court to deal with that issue, with notice to the parties so that we could produce that transcript. But if the court wants to rule on it directly, people have no objection. Your Honors, this court ruled in 2001 in Patton versus People that the defendant's guilty plea must be voluntary, intelligent, and supported by the record. Now, the county court decided that it wasn't voluntary without the record. I'm not sure.
Who's called at this hearing? I'm sorry, I haven't read it. Was the defendant brought in? I mean, how did Magistrate Moll get to the conclusion that this gentleman didn't understand not only English, he didn't understand written Spanish?
At the post-conviction motions hearing, the defense had the defendant testify and had a witness testify that stated that she heard the victim recant her story of domestic violence. And during the cross-examination of the defendant, the people had asked the defendant about basically why he pled guilty.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question. Are you concerned from your point of view as a prosecutor about the merits of this argument? Let's assume that you didn't have a transcript, and let's assume that the judge made the magistrate made the proper finding. I mean, I see you just arguing this as a notice issue. And what seems to me is the real issue is that whether a guilty plea was obtained involuntarily or not by someone that doesn't read English or Spanish.
And Your Honor, I'm not concerned with that. I believe that the guilty plea was obtained validly.
And that's because of the transcript you have, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The defendant speaks Spanish. The defendant advised in the transcript that he was read his constitutional rights in the off the Rule 11 form. And his dialogue with the court indicates that he knew what he was doing. The court explained the elements of the third degree assault. The defendant acknowledged that a guilty plea means that he did it, and also that he knew he had the right to plead not guilty. And it wasn't an issue of him just saying yes to everything the court stated, because the first time the court came around in the providency hearing to asking him whether he had had the rules read to him or if he had read the rules, he stated no. The court passed the matter over and then returned to the matter once the defendant had said that he had his rights explained to him. And further, the defendant has already completed his sentence in this matter. when the defendant, when the terms of the sentence were explained by the judge, the defendant completed those terms to the letter. So he understood what was going on. He completed his 12 months of probation, had no new law violations. He paid his court costs and fines, and he completed his 36 weeks of domestic violence counseling.
Let me just ask you one more thing, since you think that I think that you believe this entire thing turns on notice. And certainly I understand that ordinarily that people would seem to get some notice and so forth. I'm just sort of questioning the legal basis for that. I mean, the entitlement to notice, other than like notions of fairness and that sort of thing, what is it grounded in?
I mean, in other words, it's grounded in the right to due process.
That doesn't apply to prosecution.
And Your Honor, I would argue that...
And that's what I thought you had said in your brief, and that's kind of what I'm getting at. If we were to agree with you, how do we root that entitlement to notice, since it's not going to be in the due process right that you have suggested?
Your Honor, and I would argue differently.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I would argue differently. That the people are entitled to a right of due process.
So if we disagree with you on that, is that it, or do you have an alternative basis? I'm sorry, I think I've run him over.
No, due process is the root.
Mr. Barton, a few extra. Half a minute extra. Thank you.
Thank you. Your Honor, in rebuttal, concerning the hearing transcript, it was actually included in the notice of appeal and designation of record to the district court.
The transcript is part of the record?
Pardon?
The transcript is part of the appellate record.
Yes. I would encourage your honors to read that. I think it's very clear from that Mr. Sanchez didn't have a clue what was going on.
You agree that the magistrate, however, did not have that?
No, I don't, because we don't know whether he referred to it when he made his ruling or not.
Why don't we know that?
Because he did it in chambers, and we don't know what.
But it wasn't introduced into evidence.
No, it wasn't introduced into evidence. I don't know if he pulled it. On his own.
This issue of having completed the sentence, I mean, it's basically been discharged, right?
Yes.
The magistrate's ordered a new trial here. Explain to me how this works. You know, I'm a water lawyer. I don't get it.
there's a present need, Your Honor. Mr. Sanchez is a lawful permanent resident of the United States, and this could have effects on that. So I think...
But there wouldn't be any new trial, would there, in any event?
I think there would be a new trial. I think if it's reversed, there would be a new trial.
Well, interesting.
And
even though he served the original sentence, okay.
Yeah.
Somebody will explain that to me.
Okay.
Thanks.
The transfer will show that Mr. Martinez was not advised of his right to counsel, not of his advised of his right to have a jury trial, not advised of his right to confront witnesses. And
what about the elements of the crime?
There wasn't advised of the elements in the crime on the record. But the testimony was that Mr. Sanchez could not understand very well the interpreter. Number one, and number two, when he was handed the written, the advisement, the testimony, not as the district attorney stated, the testimony was is that they asked him to sign it, and he did, and the court found based on he looked at his signature. And it was further evidence that Mr. Sanchez didn't read or write Spanish and couldn't write. So I think that I wanted to correct that part.
Your time is up, Mr. Barton.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll turn to our next case.